do you fancy a new job? It's not the message you want to get from the treasurer after being at church for about 7 years. And
That's better, isn't it? And then I thought, I gave Colin the immortal words of faith. Thanks for your encouragement, Colin. I'll go away and pray about it, which is code for thanks for your encouragement, Colin. I'll just forget about that. And a couple of weeks later, I was talking to his son at a funeral, and his son asked me exactly the same question. So I said to him, have you been talking to your dad? And he said, no, he hadn't. He'd just seen the mail out, and he just thought he'd ask me. So I rang Carolyn that night and said, I think we need to take this a bit more seriously. And lo and behold, here I am. And my church has been very good, Crotts Green Baptist Church. They've released me for half my year almost. 20 Sundays I've been travelling around the country, talking to churches, meeting people. And I have two colleagues, Lisa and John, who are covering the church really and doing a really great job taking church life forwards. So I have this theme this year called Divine Windows, which is glimpses of God through life, the universe and everything. And that's about kind of how science and faith interact together. That's both science and faith are both part of my journey of life in about equal amounts. I'll explain that a little bit later on. But before I get to that, I thought I'd show you a little bit about what I've been doing this year. Because, I don't know, sometimes as Baptists, we get a bit focused in on our own local church. You ever notice that? And even if there's another church just down the road, we don't really know sometimes who the minister is or what they're doing. Well, it's like that in my neck of the woods anyway. So it's great to see, for the second time since the new year, you've been gathering together to worship, to meet, to chat together. And I hope you're not just sitting around your church tables. I hope you're going to chat across your church tables. I'm tempted at halfway through to tell you to get up and move to a different table. But no, I won't do that. So I've had this privilege, actually, of just going around the country doing different things, meeting different churches. The first church I went to visit was in Oxford, Headington Baptist Church. They wanted me to go and do a bit of science with them. They ran a science club. And so on a Saturday afternoon, I turn up with some science experiments. And the church there, because it's Oxford, is packed full of scientists, people, research scientists. So we did an afternoon with them, with families in the area doing science experiments and exploring faith. And in the morning, I ended up on BBC Radio Oxford. Unbeknown to me, the church had contacted BBC Radio Oxford and arranged for me and this professor from Oxford to go and speak on their breakfast show about science and faith, which was a really interesting experience. I get to be involved in some national events. I got to go to the Conservative Party conference. All the churches, the free churches, send somebody along to talk to MPs at the Conservative Party conference. So it's also an interesting experience chatting to them. These are mainly people who are Christians or have a contact with a church. So that's good. Although my most interesting conversation was with the person serving coffee. And, because I wear, on this occasion, I wore a dog collar. You can just about see me in the background there wearing my dog collar in the middle. And so I'm going up to get my coffee in the dog collar. I ended up chatting to him. And he assumed I was a member of the Conservative Party because I was at the conference. I'm not saying whether I am or not. And I said, no, I'm not. I'm a Baptist minister. And we got talking just over coffee about his journey exploring faith. He wasn't a Christian yet, but he'd started reading the Bible and talking to Christians, and that was the journey he was on. It was great just to encourage him on that. And over tea, sitting in Starbucks with my dog collar on, sat next to a gentleman who turned out to be the head of Gloucestershire County Council. And he was a Christian, and he'd been on a difficult journey with his health the last few years. And, you know, in the middle of that, a conference centre in Birmingham, I have a chance to pray for him in the role that he has and also for healing in his life. That's quite a privilege to do that. And you just don't know when those opportunities are going to crop up from time to time. We get to represent Carolyn and me we get to represent the Baptist Church at the Cenotaph commemoration in London. And we were there in November commemorating the end of the First World War. And you get to meet politicians. I got to talk for 20 minutes to my MP, who's the Minister for Justice. And you get to meet some very interesting people there. But the most significant part of that day is standing on Whitehall with other faith leaders, Christian and not Christian, behind are the ambassadors from the Commonwealth countries, a lot of them who struggle in terms of their life and economy. And it was a great moment. You know, I just found myself standing there praying for these nations and these leaders of the nations. But the most significant moment for me in that moving ceremony was the fact in the middle of our government, at the heart of this ceremony, we pray the Lord's Prayer together in the middle of Whitehall. And people join in. People of faith and people who perhaps don't have faith as we have it. That was very significant. The other thing I do, I get to support Lynn Green a bit, our General Secretary. I get to chat with her every now and again. I get to go to some of the national meetings where the regional team leaders get together. I get to sit on Baptist Union Council. And most of those meetings, I'm not supposed to speak. I'm just there to listen and to pray and give them a bit of feedback. But actually, not speaking is very difficult. So sometimes they do let me speak. And I've visited churches. As I said, I've been to Elston Baptist Church in Leicester. They have a gathering like this twice a year in Leicester, Leicester Baptist in Mission. And they arranged it for June to be at Elston Baptist Church, because that's the church Carolyn and I used to go to when we were at university in Leicester for about 18 months. And they really looked after us well there. Carolyn was a Christian and I wasn't. But it was a really significant place for me to go on my journey back towards faith. It was the first church I connected with after I left church in my teens. So it was great to go back there and share in Worthing with them and meet Stan and Dorothy again. Stan and Dorothy were there in the 80s when we were there, and they're still there. And they're still active in ministry at the church. That picture at the bottom is me and Stan taking part in a men's cake baking competition for the Baptist Missionary Society. And can you recognize which one's me? Middle, yeah. Somebody said, you're in the middle, that one with the posh jumper on. It probably came from BHS or Littlewoods at the time. Anyway, I remember this competition well. Two things I remember about it. We were poor students, me and Carolyn, and the cakes were flogging for so much money we couldn't afford to buy it back to eat it. The other thing I remember is on the morning they announced it at the church, there was a lady organising it, trying to persuade the men to bake cakes. And she came up to me and she said, go on, you could bake a cake. Now, I like cooking, but I don't do cakes. And I never baked a cake in my life at that point. And so I said, I don't bake cakes. She said, oh, go on, she said. Your wife will help you, because Carolyn was sitting next to me. And I leaned in close to her and I said, you know, she's not my wife. She is now, but anyway, she wasn't then. We're going out. And I've been down to Cornwall, been to Truro and St. Austell, visited Penzance, a new pioneering project in Penzance as well. And it was at Truro, St. Austell Baptist Church that I met Frances here. She got very, very excited. She came up to me at the end of the service. She was really excited because I used to work at the Met Office, and so did she. But she worked at Heathrow Airport in the late 50s into the 60s. She was one of these people who had to plot the weather charts using pens in those days. No computers. She used to take the observations and listen to them coming in over the radio and plot them on charts, so the forecasters. And so she was really excited to meet somebody else in a Baptist church who actually worked at the Met Office. We had a really good chat. And then I've been up to Yorkshire before. My friend James is pastor of Cemetery Road Baptist Church, and I went up there last September for the weekend, and they have a big ministry to Iranian asylum seekers in that church. And that picture there is the Farsi speaking service that they run on a Thursday night. In that church on a Sunday morning, when the kids go out for Sunday school, 30 to 40 Iranians go out as well for their own Alpha course, exploring faith together. And they've been baptizing 20, 30 people a year for the last few years, which was very encouraging, inspiring to see, but a lot of hard work supporting these people who, you know, if they get turned down for asylum, all their support, all the state support is cut. And so it's down to charities and people like the church to pick up the pieces and continue to support them. I also got a chance to travel overseas with the Baptist Missionary Society. They encouraged the president to go and see some of their work. So I ended up in Lebanon last June. And in Lebanon, Lebanon's what you might call a bridge country. About half the population are Muslim. 40% of the population are Christians. 10% maybe other religions. Majority Druze, this other religion there is there. And in Beirut, there is a Baptist Theological College. They are a Baptist Theological Seminary. And they bring people over from all over the Middle East to train them to be leaders in their churches in their own countries. And in those countries, there is no way they could be trained or have a college. But they bring them over on the assumption that at the end of their training, they will go back to those countries and be leaders in their churches. So that picture there is a graduating group of students. There were three students there from Sudan who were graduating. And I thought, when I heard there were Christians from Sudan, I thought they came from South Sudan, which is a Christian, majority Christian country. But no, they came from North Sudan, which is the majority Muslim country. One of them already been in prison before he came to train. And now they're back in Sudan since last September, working on youth projects, trying to build bridges between the Christian and Muslim young people in those communities, build understanding between them. And I was hosted by Arthur and Louise Brown. Arthur is now back in the UK with his family. He's a BMS director for Europe, North Africa, and the Middle East. And he kind of encouraged and organized my trip there. But for one day, we got to go out of Beirut into what's called the Bekaa Valley. The Bekaa Valley is the valley next to the Syrian border. It's where a lot of refugees come over at the border into Lebanon. And there are refugee camps for the people fleeing the war in Syria. No official refugee camps in Lebanon. Government won't have them. So these people have to rent land off farmers or do a deal with a farmer to do work on the land, to have a bit of land to put a tent up. And I went to visit Zale, True Vine Baptist Church in a town called Zale. There, that's the building there. Looks really plush, and the worship space is really plush, lined with marble. Because in Lebanon, actually, if you want people to take notice of you, you have to make it look good. That's part of their culture. But in the basement of that church is a school for refugee children, staffed by refugee teachers. And they have 180 children a day going through that school. And then on the balcony of the church, there's people sitting around waiting. That's the waiting area to go to the medical clinic. They run on the top floor of the church. They bring in medical teams in for 2 weeks at a time. There's always doctors and nurses there. And every day they're running a GP practice and a minor injuries unit up there. They run a community center in the middle of the camp with another nurses station, another smaller school, and a laundrette so people can wash their clothes, and a play area for the kids. Really good quality play area. Inspiring people doing amazing work. For people who are not their friends, as Arthur says. These people from Syria are not their friends. 15 years ago, these people were their enemies. Syria occupied and dominated Lebanon for a long, long time. And yet they have welcomed them and they care for them, these people who were their enemies. Not a big church. I think Zale True Vine Church has 90 members. I went to another church in Beirut with 30 members whose building is the third floor of an old industrial unit. And there they run a church. They run a school for about 80 kids a day. A church of 30 members. I'm not sure if many of our churches of 90 or 30 would be capable of doing that. And there are difficulties here, I know. There's red tape and health and safety, things like that. You don't have so much of that over there. But they had a real heart to bless these people. Still sticks in my memory some of those visits. But my theme this year is this theme about science and faith, divine windows. And if you want to find out the closest thing to science in the Bible, it's in the book of Job, towards the end of the book of Job. There's not much science in the Bible, but it's close to science in the book of Job. And one thing I notice at the book of Job, in those verses in chapter 38, is they may not have had science back in those days, but they were very good observers of the world around them, better than we are today in our ordinary, everyday lives. So let me read you a few verses from the book of Job. Here we are, starting at verse 31. Can you bind the beautiful Pleiades? Can you loose the cords of Orion? By the way, if it's dark tonight when you leave, and if I speak for about 3 hours, it will be. No, sorry. If it's dark tonight and clear when you leave, you'll both see the Orion and the Pleiades in the sky tonight, if you know where to look. If you don't know where to look, I'll be happy to point them out to you, if it's clear, that is. Can you bind the beautiful Pleiades? Can you loose the cords of Orion? Can you bring forth the constellations in their seasons, or lead out the bear with its cubs? Do you know the laws of the heavens? Can you set up God's dominion over the earth? Can you raise your voice to the clouds and cover yourself with a flood of water? Do you send the lightning bolts on their way? Do they report to you? Here we are. Who endowed the heart with wisdom, or gave understanding to the mind? Who has the wisdom to count the clouds? Who can tip over the water jars of the heavens when the dust becomes hard and the clods of earth stick together? I love that passage, because it kind of covers two areas of science that I've been involved in. My first engagement with science, really, after I left school, was physics and astrophysics. Can you bind the beautiful Pleiades together? I wanted to find out about how the Pleiades formed and how they kind of were bound together like that. I wanted to understand how that worked. And so I went to Leicester University. Carolyn was there as well. She's a chemist, and I'm a physicist. The irony is now that she's a science technician in the senior school doing physics, and she knows more about experimental physics than I do. A romantic night for us, by the way, in the past. There's been me coming home from a deacon's meeting and find the table covered in voltmeters that need soldering. And it's a three-handed job. But it was a nice romantic hour and a half, wasn't it, dear? So we were at Leicester together. My intention was to be an astronomer. Slight problem with that, really, in that growing up I was frightened of the dark. And so that was a bit difficult. But I got sidetracked in my third year. I got interested in clouds. I got interested in the atmospheres of planets that we were studying as part of my course. And instead of being an astronomer, I decided to go into meteorology. And I went to do my doctorate at Imperial College in London. And I did 3 years studying thunderstorms, model thunderstorms, on what we called a supercomputer. It's about as powerful as a laptop today. So, you know, who has wisdom to count the clouds? I have to say that at one point in my doctoral work, my research work, I was counting clouds, and it was very boring, but very interesting, very useful. So there are kind of two sides to my scientific life, and I got interested in science at a very, very young age. It was pictures like this that got me interested in science. This is called Earthrise. It was taken on Christmas Eve, 1968, by the astronauts of Apollo 8. That was 50 years ago, last Christmas Eve. They were the first people to orbit the moon. And as they orbited the moon, they saw the Earth rising above the lunar horizon. And they took this iconic picture. It's one of the first times we had seen the Earth just set on its own in the vastness of space there. And it was these kind of things that got me interested in science at school and led me to go to university. Now, did you know that Baptists together have some values which are supposed to shape our life? Did you know that? Now, your regional minister is nodding. So I'm tempted to test him. But I won't, because that would be cruel. But we have five values, and they are these. We are spirit-led communities. We are about being one team together. We want to embrace adventure in going forward with God. And we want to inspire others to discover something more about Jesus. And we share a hunger for God's kingdom. It's that inspiring others that I just want to talk about a little bit. Because actually, each of those comes with a little paragraph to explain to you what it means. And this one says, with the generosity of spirit, we want to energize and motivate people to be all that God created them to be. That's great. I grew up in a Baptist church. And they were about this. They were about motivating me to be all that God wanted me to be. And one of the people who did that was a lady called Margaret Homer. Margaret Homer was head of the Sunday school. And sadly, she died this year, aged 82, I think. I had the privilege of doing her funeral back at my family church back in Nottinghamshire, Forest Street Baptist Church. And Margaret was the head of the Sunday school. She was also the head local librarian of the library, and I spent a lot of my time in the library going up reading books. And maybe this was why, at the end of every year, if you'd attended well the Sunday school, you got a prize. And the prize we got every year was a book. Does anybody else remember this growing up? Had a beautiful inscription, you know, one of these plates on the inside of it saying attendance 1963-4 and things like this. Well, the first book that got me when I was about four was a book of farmyard animals. Beautiful book. Well, yeah, I suppose it's about creation, really, so there's a bit of a faith link. And then in the second year, they got me this. The Ladybird easy reading book of the baby Jesus. Now, this is in the day when Ladybird books were nice. I don't know if you know about Ladybird books now, but they're not so nice, are they? They're a bit comic these days. I mean, I have got on my bedside table that Carolyn gave me a few Christmas ago, the Ladybird book of being a husband. And I refer to it every now and again. But that was the first book they gave me, the book of baby Jesus. And the second, the next year, they gave me this book. Now, this is a bit of a strange book for a Baptist church to be given out, I think. It's the Ladybird easy reading book, a first book of the saints. We didn't really do saints in Baptist church when I was growing up. We don't really do saints to now. But anyway, they bought me that book, and it's quite an interesting book. My daughter used it in, she's in an Anglican school in Watford, linked to a high Anglican church, where they definitely do saints. So she had to teach the reception class about saints. Amazing how useful that book is 50 years later, actually. Now, the next year, they got me this book. Now, I'm not quite sure what this book has to say about ecumenical relationships in North Nottinghamshire in the 1960s, because they got me James I and the Gunpowder Plot. Now, in their defense, at the back of it, there's a bit about how the King James Bible came to be written. And so I guess that's what they had in mind. And then I guess I'm about eight, and they think, well, what would an eight-year-old be interested in? So the next year, and this is in my loft somewhere, and I can't find it. I'll probably find it when we move again. They bought me the Ladybird Book of the History of Football. Now, the problem with that is that I wasn't that interested in football, and I couldn't really kick a ball, much to my father's disappointment, because he's a good footballer. But again, I have to say, this book came in very useful when I went to Croxley Green 8 years ago, because Croxley Green had a football team, mainly of non-Christian men who'd grown up through the Boys Brigade and now are in their late 20s, playing football together for 10 years. So I started having an end-of-season service. We did this for 2 years before the team, club closed. And did you know, a lot of the big football teams were started by churches. Manchester United, Manchester City, Liverpool, Everton. All churches. Do you know why there are two main teams in Manchester and Liverpool? One was Protestant, one was Catholic. That's how it happened. So that book was quite useful in preparing for these services. And then the next year, I must have been about nine. I think, what's a nine-year-old interested in? And they bought me a book of fast cars. Problem is, I'm not that interested in fast cars or any kind of car, really. It's just a piece of metal on wheels to get you from A to B. So that didn't go down so well. And then I guess maybe Margaret was thinking, well, what is going to hit the nail on the head? And maybe she'd seen where I was going in the children's library section. Because this is what they bought me when I was 10. The Pernell Library of Knowledge, Prehistoric Animals. Now, it's a bit old now. None of the dinosaurs have feathers. So, you know, that's something we've discovered since then. All that we talked about dinosaurs being cold-blooded like reptiles, but we now think dinosaurs were warm-blooded like mammals, some of them. So it's a bit old-fashioned. But they gave me this. And they were right, because I was interested in science. She'd seen me going to the science section. So they bought me a book about science. Now, you may feel that's a bit dangerous, buying a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old a book about dinosaurs. And maybe it was. But that's what I was interested in. It's fascinating, at the back page of that book, there's no author in this book, but on the back page, at the final page, it says, "We don't know how the dinosaurs died out. But maybe one of you reading this book will find out." That's an amazing thing, to try and encourage a child to have that kind of questioning attitude towards life and to try and understand things and to try and, you know, for those of us who are interested in science, to try and encourage that as a church, I think is really very important and valuable. Because, you know, I wasn't interested in football. I wasn't very good at art, but I was pretty good at science. And in our churches sometimes, you know, we encourage art and drama and music and things like all the kind of things I'm not very good at. But we don't encourage young people and children who take an interest in science. So I think that's a really important thing we can do as churches. And all of your children and young people in your churches and in your communities will do science at school until they are 16. They'll do it from even in reception class until they are 16. They have to. This is part of their world. And actually, we need to say to them in our churches, this is an important part of life. Because sometimes we don't do that. In Milton Keynes, where we were before, I had a conversation with a girl who was 15. At the end of a lesson, because of my background in weather and climate research, the science teacher who I knew had asked me to go in to do a session on climate change, not about faith, but on science. So I do this session on climate change. And I just introduced myself at the start of the meeting that I was a minister in one of the local Baptist churches. At the end of that session, this girl in the front row says to me, "Sir, how can you be a Christian and a scientist? Because if you are a scientist, you have to believe in evolution." So we have a chat about that. And then I'm not going to the staff room to have my lunch with some of the teachers. Her and three of her friends stop me on the corridor. And they say, "Can we ask you some more questions?" I said, "Yeah." And so her opening question was this. "You know when scientists say human beings were monkeys in the times of the prophets?" And I say, "Hang on a minute, I think you got your time scales mixed up there a bit." So I said, "You go to church, do you?" And she said, "Yeah, we all go to the same church." And so do they tell you in that church, in your church, that if you're going to be a Christian, you have to believe everything the Bible says literally about how the world is made and how things happen? And she said, "Yes." Well, we had a bit of a chat beyond that, and I was trying to encourage them to say, actually, what we believe about Jesus is actually more fundamental for faith. But two things I think two things that I came away from that conversation that stayed with me. One is that she and her friends will never do very well at science at school. They're already in the lowest science set in that school. Because some significant people in their adolescent lives, in their church, have told them it's not worth it. It's a lie. So why bother? And the second thing I worry about, and I guess she'd be in her mid-20s now, her and her friends, is that the way they get out of the bubble of their church and their youth group into a bigger world out there and come across lots and different views that people hold and have, two things may happen. One, she'll either retreat back into the bubble of her safe community, or her faith is going to be put under so much pressure that it's just going to collapse. So we need to think about how we engage some of our children and young people for whom science is a big part of their life with science, really, and how it engages with faith. And one of the ways I've been trying to do that for about the last 3 or 4 years, and particularly the last couple of years, is with the Messy Church Network. Anybody do Messy Church here? Yeah? Well, Messy Church is, for those of you who don't know, Messy Church is a family kind of church. It normally happens on a month, can happen on a Saturday or Sunday or midweek. We run down on a Wednesday afternoon after school, and normally it involves craft and painting and sticking and things like that. And I noticed some of the kids in my Messy Church were getting a bit bored with that. So I just started doing science experiments with them. And that's developed into this project where about 18 months ago, nearly 2 years ago, we published a book called Messy Church to Science. And there's 100 experiments for churches to play with in that, and links to prayer and faith. And this is me in my white coat, because when I do messy science, I become Dr. Dave. And that cartoon, as I said, that's me as well. You can decide if it's an accurate representation of Dr. Dave, but that's me. And I do very simple science experiments with kids. And so I just brought a few with me tonight. This is a very simple one. This is a wave maker. I should have brought the bigger one, but I didn't have room in the car for it. So this is just water at the bottom. So that's blue. Water's blue, isn't it? No. The sky's blue. That's why water looks blue. Interesting question. Why is the sky blue? But we'll discuss that later. So this is just a wave maker. And just make waves with this. You can make little waves and big waves. We talk about why waves form by the wind. And then, I mean, you could use this in different ways. I have used it to talk about Jesus calming the storm. If you stop it, it just calms down. Or I've sometimes used it to talk about the storms families and children have in their lives. And actually, God wants to bring stillness and peace to people's lives. So it's just simple little science experiments like that. This is this is another one. This is called a Cartesian diver. Can you see that little plink floating plastic thing? If you just squeeze this bottle, it sinks. And it goes up. Oh, slowly. It's just because when you squeeze it, more water gets pushed into the straw and it becomes too heavy. So I use this again for prayer. What's making you sink? What's putting you under pressure? And how might God release that for you? So just simple things, no massive explosions. Carolyn's my health and safety guru on that, so she tells me what I can and cannot do so I don't burn down the church or anybody other's churches. Or I do this one sometimes in church on a Sunday morning. This is a simple experiment involving a hairdryer and a ball pit ball. Now, I'm going to put it on the hairdryer. I'm going to turn the hairdryer on. What do you think is going to happen? Yeah, and? Stay in the air. Do you think so? Are you sure? Anybody think it's going to jump up and stay in the air? Hands up if you think it's going to happen. Hands up who thinks it's going to fall off. You see, they haven't got the faith that you have they? Okay, you ready? 3, 2, 1. There you go. It didn't fall off. Well done. Now, the next question is, if I have it floating there like that and I move the hairdryer, what's going to happen? Ball's going to go with it. Who said that? Yeah, ball's going with it. Who thinks the ball's going to go with the hairdryer? Yeah, who thinks the ball's going to just fall on the floor? Who just isn't brave enough to have a go? Yeah, most of you, right. You ready? Right, 3, 2, 1. Ooh, see? Goes with it. Now the question is, why does it go with it? And the reason is that with the air going up like that, there's slightly lower pressure in the middle, and that kind of squeezes the ball over the hairdryer. So when I move it, the air pressure squeezes it and makes it go. Now, I've known about this experiment for years. But this summer, I thought, I wonder what happens if I just twist the hairdryer a bit like that. What do you think is going to happen then? It's going to fall off. You've got one track answer, haven't you, there? Right, you're ready. Now, you're just going to shoot off? No? You're going to think it's going to go? Right, well, some people... Now, science is... Sometimes things go wrong in science. So sometimes this works. And I'm still trying to figure out why it don't work and why it sometimes does work. But we'll see what happens. So if it don't work the first time, we'll try it again. Is that all right? Right, you ready? Twist. Ooh. Now that's amazing. You should be really glad that that's amazing. Because that ball is floating in the air like that for the same reason. For the same reason as an airplane doesn't fall out of the sky. Just that a slightly different speed in the air over the top and the bottom, and that pushes it up. So when I do this experiment, I want to say to people, you know, when was the last time you took a risk for God? Oh, when was the last time you took a step out of where you're comfortable, where you think you can cope with, and take a step into a place where actually God's leading you where you've never been before? When was the last time you do that? Have a prayer about that, about your willingness to step out, to take risks, to embrace adventure with God. Thanks for this. Interesting, I told that story about my book on dinosaurs at that church, Headington in Oxford. And somebody came up to me afterwards and said, oh, my 15-year-old son has written a book on dinosaurs. And he had. It's an amazing book for a 15-year-old. He's drawn all the pictures of dinosaurs himself. He's researched it all. They self-published it. It's on the web. And I bought a copy of it here. And I just kind of hope that sharing that story of my journey through my teenage years might enable him to do what I didn't do. I hope it will enable him to keep engaging with faith and church. Because I didn't. At 14, I bailed and left. And for 5 or 6 years, I didn't really engage with church and faith until I went to university. And I went to university, I guess, to answer something of that question that Job's asked in chapter 38. Do you know the laws of the heavens? I wanted to understand something about how the universe worked. And on the first day, I'm walking back to where I'm living in one of the halls of residence with a guy called Steph. And Steph is doing the same degree as me, physics and astrophysics. And we're walking up this road in Leicester called Queen Road. By the way, this is Steph. Not the red Dalek, but the other person. We're walking up this road... In Leicester, away from the university. And at this point here, outside this shop, was a shop in those days. It's what I would call a beer off. Do you have a beer offs up here? Off licenses? Yeah, in Nottinghamshire, we called them beer offs. So we get to that point, and Steph, just out of the blue, says to me, are you a Christian? And I guess at that stage, my understanding of being a Christian was somebody who was brought up in England, Christian country, that made you a Christian? And he was probably the first person to clearly explain to me there was a bit more about it than that. And this puzzled me. This really puzzled me, because here was Steph, an intelligent guy, better A levels than me, studying a subject which he loved and I loved, and yet he believed this stupid thing about God and faith and Jesus. But it intrigued me how he could bring these two things together. And so it started a conversation through the rest of that year, and then with other people who were doing science, who were Christians as well. And something about that conversation must have stuck. Because the next year, I am walking down another road in Leicester one morning towards the next set of lectures on my own. And I guess I'm pondering some of the things that I'd been talking to Steph and people about for through that year. And as I got halfway down that road, I found myself asking a question, or making a statement to myself, really. And I just thought to myself, you know, maybe there is a God. I'd spent 18 months studying physics, studying something of the wonder of the universe and creation. Pictures like this one here, which actually was taken a few years after this moment, but, you know, shows the vastness and the amazingness of the universe. This is a picture taken from the space telescope, the Hubble Space Telescope. It's of a patch of the sky, which is so, so small. Imagine the full moon in the sky. It's about the size of a 10p piece held up like this, at arm's length. And then imagine just 1%, 1/100th of the full moon. Well, that's that. That's what you're seeing there. Just that little speck of the sky. And in that one speck of the sky, people have counted 5,500 galaxies. Just in one speck of the sky. A galaxy is a collection of maybe 100 million, 200 million stars. And just in that little bit, there are 5,500. I've been looking at that and those kind of things for 18 months, and I suddenly think to myself, maybe there is a God. But the next step, my thought is, but what has that got to do with me? What has that got to do with me? I think there are two things I take from that encounter with Steph, in that sometimes we need to be bold. We need to be bold in just telling people about our faith or starting a conversation about our faith. It wasn't a church, it was on a street, an ordinary street in Leicester in late afternoon one day. And, you know, and it was on my ground as well. It wasn't come to an Alpha course, come to church, come to hear about things in the Bible. It was on my ground. You know, he was interested in science, I was interested in science. And he came to me. He met me where I was and started that conversation and journey in science. And the other thing I take from me walking down that road and thinking maybe there is a God, sometimes when it comes to mission, I think we need to think much bigger than we do. We're already thinking bigger. How do we connect with people who have no idea of what faith and Jesus and church is about? We talk a lot about pioneering and starting, have conversations in places, as I said, in their space, not in our space. But I think we need to think bigger than that. Because I think God has the capacity to connect with people through all of the different interests and things that they have in their lives, even just walking down an ordinary street, even through science. I guess part of what was going on there was an experience of wonder. As I looked at the world around me, there is a wonder about it. As people look at the world around them, they do have a sense of wonder. And it's not linked to whether they have faith or not. Everybody experiences this. Everybody's breath is taken away by a beautiful sunset, like I saw over Land's End when I was in Cornwall. People went to Land's End to watch the sun go down. And I bet you most of them had no idea about faith. Well, you see some of the beautiful vistas. I've just driven over the top of the moors between Keighley and Halifax and here. And, you know, looking out over that valley and the moors in the distance, it is beautiful. There is a wonder about it. And maybe in that sense of wonder, it can draw us on to encounter something of God, something in the vastness, the bigness of the universe that can make us feel so small at times. Then maybe there's a moment there that we can connect with the idea that there is God who knows us. A universe where there's not just a mess, but an order. And actually where order seems to arise sometimes out of the mess of the way things work and actually out of the mess of life. Maybe there is something there to connect people with God. Or just the beauty of it. The beauty of it speaks about the glory of God and what God values. I think people may have an encounter with God through all of these things, through their everyday lives in lots and lots of different ways. And yet maybe they just don't know what it means. And they need somebody to perhaps explain that to them. But of course, some people look at the wonder of creation and the wonder that science shows them, and yet it becomes just a kind of a, it's beautiful, it's wondrous, and yet that's as far as it goes. Last year, Stephen Hawking, iconic scientist, an iconic human being, an amazing human being, he passed away, sadly. And about in the late 1980s, he published a book called A Brief History of Time. That title is a lie. It certainly wasn't a brief book. Has anybody got that book? Yeah, keep your hands up. How many of you got that book? Keep your hands up, right, about four or five of us. Keep your hands up if you've read it. Well done if you've read it. It's a hard read. I think that book is like the Bible. Often owned, less often read. But at the back of that book, Stephen Hawking wrote this final line, which has puzzled people of faith for a long, long time. If we do discover a complete theory, it would be the ultimate triumph of human reason. For then we would know the mind of God. I think that has worried people of faith for a long, long time since he wrote those words. Because it seems to undermine our need to have faith in a creator. And if you want some clarification of what his faith position was, you've got to read his last book, which was published after he died. It's a collection of essays he wrote from his personal papers, which they were publishing towards the end of his life. It's called Brief Answers to Big Questions. And it's a bit more accessible, this book, but if you ask me, that title sounds a bit like Alpha, doesn't it? And the first chapter in that book, this is a book on science, and the first chapter in this book is called Is There a God? And he says at the start of that chapter, scientists are being asked to answer questions that in the past would have been answered by philosophers and theologians. And he explores what science might have to say about God. The science is great, the theology is really quite weak, but then he's not a theologian, he's a scientist. But at the end of that chapter, he comes clean. And he says, do I have faith? It's my view that the simplest explanation is that there is no God. He's looked at the wonder of science, the amazing things of the universe, the understanding actually which humans can have, which is incredible, you know, being an infinitesimally small speck in the middle of this vast universe, and yet we can understand with our minds how it works. He looks at that, and in the end he says, there is no God. For wonder only goes so far. But I don't think that is the end of the story. And I think what happened 50 years ago on Christmas Eve, as the Apollo 8 astronauts saw Earth rise and orbited the moon, says actually through this experience of wonder, it can connect people with the divine. Going to work? Most watched bit of TV to that point. And when those astronauts saw the wonder of not only the moon but the Earth hanging there in space, for them it didn't end with the beauty of it, the order of it. Their thoughts turned to the creator behind it. And from lunar orbit, they took it in turn to read something, to read the first part of Genesis to a world that was watching and waiting. It was through this experience of wonder and puzzlement and questions, and I still ask questions, a lot of questions. It was through them that I began my journey back to faith. It wasn't the end of the journey, but it certainly was the start of it through science that eventually reconnected me with that church in Leicester and eventually brought me to an encounter with Jesus 35 years ago. And there may be people you know who might start their journey in faith the same way. Maybe some children and young people in your church may start their journey in faith in the same way. See, I think God can speak to us through everything. In God we live and move and have our being, Paul said to the Athenians. I think that's true. And through the wonder of creation, through an experience of wonder, through what science shows us about the world, here is a window through which we can encounter the God behind it all. And I'm still doing that. I'm still doing that. I was walking up to a church meeting last May, and I'm walking up my road, and as I'm walking up the road, this is what I'm seeing. By the way, that quote from Job up there is nothing to do with the church meeting that followed this story. Okay. And I see this in the sky ahead of me, and then on my Facebook feed starts buzzing with people who are seeing the same thing in the sky, and they're asking me, what on earth is it? Can you see anything in that picture that might have piqued their interest? A cross. Yeah, you might say there's a cross. Yeah, it wasn't quite the cross. In the clouds, you mean? No, it wasn't that. Wasn't that. But it's a good answer. Good. Oh, you're on the ball, sir. Sun dog. Yeah, let me show you what our friend there is saying. Sorry, I'm troubling with my earphones. There you go. Can you see those two things there? They're called sun dogs. And they form either side of the sun. They're like, in this case, they've got rainbows in them, but they're not rainbows. Because if you ever see a rainbow, the sun's always behind you. Right behind you. This, the sun's in front of me. And we're seeing these two patches of rainbow in the sky. What they are is that they're caused by the ice crystals in the clouds in front of the sun. And if you put your hand, your thumb on the sun, they're about here when you stretch out your hand. And in this case, because the ice crystals all over the sky, they're either side of the sun. Sun dogs, caused by the ice crystals in the clouds. These are really good examples because you get the rainbow in them as well. And sometimes you just get the bright white light. That's why they're called sun dogs. They follow the sun around. The other thing they're called is mock suns because they look like suns. But they just follow the sun through the sky. Sun dogs are really important to me. I mean, I'm a meteorologist, and I kind of roughly know how they form. But I was getting baptized, 35 years ago. And I don't know about you, but it's a bit of a vulnerable journey coming up towards baptism. And a few weeks before it happened, I was wondering whether this was the right step for me at this time. And I was on a train journey back from the South Coast on Sunday afternoon, and I was puzzling these things over when I looked out of the window, and there was a sun dog with a rainbow in it. And it was God saying to me, it'll be all right. Because you know the story of the rainbow in the Bible, the story of Noah and the rainbow put into the sky after the flood as a sign of God's care for the whole of creation, including us. To me, it's a sign of hope that God knows. I told this story back at that church in Oxford in Headington last May on Pentecost Sunday. And when I got back from Holiday in August, there was an email waiting for me from a lady from that church. Long time to respond after a visit. And she said that she wasn't at church that day I came. She suffered from ME, very severe ME, and she really got to church. And that day had been really difficult for her. And she didn't feel like doing anything. And she was really at a low point in her faith. But she could go out to the garden. It was a nice day. So she went out to the garden and looked up and saw a sun dog. And she just was reminded of the rainbow. And like me, 30 years before, she's felt God saying to her, it's going to be all right. I'm still here. You're still important. And then she said it was really a bad day. So I just went inside and I just had to lay down on the settee. And I thought I'd catch up with the sermons on the church website. So I didn't listen to the previous Sundays. I went back and I just clicked on Pentecost. That's when you came, and that's when you told your story about sun dogs. And again, it was just an amazing coincidence that God was reassuring me again, it would be okay. Through nature, through science, we can encounter God in significant ways. So I just encourage you just to be aware of the world around you. Just to be aware of what science is saying about the world. But don't leave it there. Just perhaps God might invite you to discuss something more of him. And I want to leave you with a rainbow tonight. Because when you become president of the Baptist Union, they say you can give away a free gift. And I said to them, well, what do you mean? And said, well, normally it's a bookmark with your theme on it, and a photograph of you on it. And I thought, well, that's a bit boring. So I said, can we give everybody a bit of scientific equipment to play with? And I showed them what I meant, and they said, oh, yeah, well, maybe we can do that. Well, go and price it up. And they made me 1,000 of them. And I gave away 1,000 of them, and I said, can you make me some more? They gave me 500 more. So I'd like to give you tonight my giveaway gift as Baptist Union president. But I tell you what, we're going to give it to you tonight, but what you have to promise to do, just for a moment, just be patient, because I know you're full of the gifts of the Spirit, the fruit of the Spirit, and patience is one of them. There's a little plastic window. There's a little window with a bit of plastic in it. Do not look through the window. What did I say? Do you think you can do that? I'm sure you can. Children can do this, so you can do this. The other thing I'd say about this window is never, ever look at the sun through it. And this is a serious bit. Never look at the sun through it, because it will damage your eyes. Okay, because the sun's far too bright to look at. So what did I just say? Wonderful. And there's a reminder on the back, just to do that. So first thing is I need a couple of people to help me take this out. So, friend, could you just start giving those around the tables there. Somebody want to do it on this side? And if we run out, I've got some more. No peeking. I'm watching. Tell you what, why don't you start taking some in the middle and just passing them back? That would be great. Okay, has everybody got one? You got one? Oh. Well, that's so gracious of you. Have another one. Anybody else not got one? Oh. Okay. You want some more at the back? Okay. Everybody got one? Great. Okay. So these are what are called diffraction gratings. It's a special piece of plastic. There's 13,000 lines scratched on that per inch. I don't know how they do that, but it's pretty incredible. This is the moment you've all been waiting for. So just look for a white light. Spotlights would be good. Just look for a white light and look at it through your diffraction grating. Can you see that? You see, you don't have to wait for a rainbow in the sky anymore. You've got your own rainbow maker. Okay? Actually, this is what scientists will use to look at light to figure out the substances that make the light. So you could look at stars through this. If you had a proper, really accurate one, you could look at stars through this and find out how hot they are, what chemicals are in them. This is how we explore the universe through these things. So look at your rainbow for a minute, because they are rainbow makers, but I think they're hope makers too, or they're hope reminders. And maybe tonight you know somebody who needs some hope in their lives. And I just invite you, as you look at that rainbow, those rainbows, to remember that person. and just to ask God to reveal themselves to them and to bring hope. Maybe tonight you need hope. You need to know more the hope that God has for you in Jesus Christ. Maybe you are feeling blue. Or maybe you're angry and red. Or maybe something of the greenness of life has missed you by. Maybe you're flagging with energy and need a bit of yellow in your life. What hope does God need to bring to you today? Ask God for it. The God who cares for all creation and cares for you. And finally, Jesus said, you are the light of the world. Light shining into the darkness. What hope does God need to shine through you to the worlds in which you live in, at home or at work or at school or in your church community, in your neighborhood? What hope does God want to bring through you? Offer yourself to be an agent to the God of hope, the God who puts the rainbow in the sky. Thank you, Father God, for hope that you give us, for the way we encounter you through the whole of creation and all of life. Help us to be aware of it. And help us to be a people who share in creation's glory. That through Jesus Christ's presence in our life, your glory would be known and revealed. That others would be able to live in hope and put their faith in you, Jesus. We offer ourselves to you for this. Amen. Okay. Well, thank you for coming tonight. I hope it's been worthwhile, and I certainly enjoyed chatting with some of you. There's one more thing I want to do, Adrian, actually. I want to launch a rocket. Is that all right? Can I launch a rocket? Because one of the things I do in Messy Church is we do prayer rockets. I get the kids to write prayers on rockets, and then we launch them. It's amazing how keen adults and children are to pray when they're writing the prayers on a rocket. And this is my rocket launcher. And when I became president at the Baptist Assembly last year in Peterborough, they kind of cut down the amount of time the president has to say to the assembly. It used to be half an hour. And then it became 15 minutes. And when I got there last year, they said I could have five. So I thought, five? You can't say much in 5 minutes, can you, really? So I thought, if you can't say very much, I'll make it memorable. So I wrote a prayer based on the Baptist Together values. I printed it on the rocket, and I launched it over the assembly. And we prayed the prayer together, and we launched it. And interestingly, when I went to that church in Leicester, a man came up to me and said, I've got your rocket. So this is a prayer based on the Baptist Together values. I'd like us to say it together. And at the end of it, you'll notice it's not a simple amen. There's a countdown, because all rockets need countdowns. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. When you say amen, I'm going to stamp on the bottle, and the rocket is going to launch into the space of this church and over you to bless you as Baptist churches in this area. So let's pray this prayer together. Lord Jesus, shape us and lead us by your unifying spirit. Celebrating your diversity in us, may we become a one another people. Give us courage to share in the adventure of your servant-hearted life, so that inspired to become all we are, others catch a glimpse of you. An embracing a cross-shaped world, living the hope of resurrection, may our Father's kingdom come. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Way! Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dave. Thank you for coming to share something of your story. And I know that's been an encouragement to us this afternoon. And also sharing something of your journey over the last year as Baptist Union President. And I know you've got a few more engagements
yep.
before that time ends in May.
Yep.
And we'll be continuing to hold you in prayer.
Thank
both you.
Both you
and Carolyn as you,
appreciate that.
As you travel and
really
do that.
But
we just want to thank you again on behalf of the Huddersfield Baptist Churches and Halifax as well. Halifax and Huddersfield Baptist Churches. We just want to say a big thank you again for taking the time to come and share.
Thank
with
you.
Us.
Thank you very much. And thanks.
And we need to thank Jane as well
yeah.
for arranging the catering, the cakes and the food. Thank you very much, Jane. That's lovely. There are still some cakes over there, so if you need something before you go on your way, then please feel free to help yourself to some of those. But thanks again for coming out this evening and sharing in what's been a good afternoon together. Thank you.
One more thing. Can I take a photograph of you? I'm taking a photographic log of where I've been, you know. And just to encourage people, say, well, these are part of the Baptist family as well. So I've got one of these panoramic cameras, so I'm going to start here. And go around like that. So you've got to wave at me. Wave at the rest of the Baptists, okay? You ready? Here we go. Go. Start waving. Keep waving, keep waving, keep waving, keep waving, keep waving. That's great. That's great. Thank you. God bless.